For the past few weeks, you've been sending in photos of the buildings you think are the worst in the city, and now it's time to hear about the best of the worst, so to speak. Christopher Gray, who writes the Streetscapes column for the New York Times each week in the Sunday real estate section, joins me now to talk about what makes a building ugly or inappropriate or whatever we decide is wrong with it. And we will be speaking with the winners of the worst building submissions. And we thank you, Christopher, for coming back.
Thank you, Leonard. And I can tell you, I don't think we know. We certainly can't express it. It's like pornography. We know it when we see it, right?
But different people have different ideas of what is an ugly building. We did a little open phone segment not long ago on this. And most of the calls were of some new buildings that were going up that people just hated in their neighborhood, either because they were too large or, in the case of the Gwathmey and Astor Place, because it just looked too weird to them. There are other people like me who think that the P.C. Richards store on Atlantic Avenue and Flatbush has to be the worst thing, or something like that is the worst thing. Just be, I mean, at least the Gwathmey is ambitious on some level.
Yes.
And he is a great architect, usually. Mm-hmm. But whoever did the P.C. Richards, it looks like it should have been designing army barracks. We have different ideas of what makes ugly.
And they change also. And you're right, they're very variable. Everybody listening, you have to get onto the Flickr page with the wider group of submissions of all these really ugly, ugly buildings that people have sent in. I like most of them, I'm afraid to say. They're fabulous.
Had you been aware of most of them before you saw them?
No. Here's something in Red Hook. It's not even a building. It's an old renovation project covered in a blue tarp, 75 feet high and 100 feet wide. And it's all torn, and apparently it makes noises and flaps in the wind. What a fabulous
Christo
work of
did
art.
It.
Yeah, Christo did it, exactly, on a bad day, I guess, perhaps. So many of those are so fabulous. And the thing about buildings, ugly and beautiful, they really express humanity, or they can't express humanity.
Well, what would you say is a definition of a really bad building? Is it that somebody aimed high and failed? Or, for example, I think probably there's a whole group of buildings in New York we could call ugly, the ziggurat buildings that were built in the, I guess it was the 50s and 60s to conform to zoning code. They're nondescript. I think they're ugly, but I'm not sure I would want to be going around taking pictures of them and sending them in as the ugliest buildings in New York.
The principal thing, I think, is does it express the human quality? Bilbao, for instance, Frank Gehry's thing, or any of Frank Gehry's buildings are technically very machined. They look very machine parts, but they're really hand-assembled. They're really craft buildings, and those express the human touch. The banal, big skyscrapers that are absolutely devoid of any character or change, those are the things that I think come closest to a universal.
Many people hated the World Trade Towers until they were knocked down.
And then,
would they
have
been among your worst?
Absolutely, yes. I think we're going to get to it later, but they really are an epic monument to cheap. They were an epic monument to cheap. And really, although they are demolished, they'll be with us for so much longer.
What about changing tastes? There are buildings that once were considered beautiful, now considered ugly. There are buildings that were once considered ugly that we now think are gorgeous.
It's anarchy out there. There's no organization. You know, when you and I were kids 40 years ago, you ask people at a party, what were your 10 worst buildings? And it would be the regular things. Pan Am, it was always very predictable. Pan Am building, Co-op City, Madison Square Garden, the General Motors building, anything, especially anything big and kind of awful.
Or I call it the Marriott Marquis de Sade building.
The Marriott Marquis de Sade building. But now, many of those buildings are, the opinion is divided on many of those buildings on the website. I love the Pan Am building, and I think it should be a landmark.
You list your own 14 worst buildings, which people can see in a slideshow on our show page, and I was surprised. there are a bunch of museums on it. I would have thought museums would have really good buildings. You mentioned Bilbao before. It's considered one of the great art treasures of the world. Mm-hmm. But the Whitney, the Jewish Museum, and you don't like the new addition to the Museum of Modern Art.
The Museum of Modern Art, it's not quite so much that I don't like the addition. It's what the addition did to this wonderful, spectacular, original 1939 building, which was this crisp, modernist gem. It relied so much on it elbowing aside on that street the brownstones and mansions. Once it was enveloped by the later buildings, no matter how good they were, it totally lost its character.
What's wrong with the Museum of Modern Art addition? It's just that it doesn't look like a...
It's a perfectly fine modern building, not worthy of all the hullabaloo, but perfectly great building. It's what it did to the central building, the original building of MoMA.
You call 60 Wall Street something from the Gordon Gekko School of Architecture.
I really think that, to me, that expresses so much the 1980s go-go, LBO, buyout, hedge fund guys smoking cigars and kicking puppies and cheating on their wives. It's got this big pyramidal top, and it makes me think of the pharaohs with hundreds, thousands and thousands of slaves. It's also extremely chunky and very densely built because of the air rights were transferred from a nearby building.
There's a building like that Philip Johnson did on Nassau Street that looks like a castle, an outsized castle with turrets in the middle of much lower buildings that has that same kind of oversized quality. It's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am not so we're concerned about pure size because the contrast is New York is what we like. The 60 Wall is really impressive because there are skyscrapers. Now, I find the Philip Johnson building on John and Nassau, I think that's something here, interesting as a design, not very successful. But that was the 1980s. You could not be picky.
You didn't like Stuyvesant Town. Don't those wonderful inner spaces and parks count for anything?
Boy, here comes trouble, because so many people are happy with Stuyvesant Town. Lisi de Bourbon, I'm talking to you. And it's a wonderful place to live and grow up, I'm sure. But the public aspect of Stuyvesant Town is what bothers me, what you see. That's why I cringe when I go by there in a cab or on foot. It's true that the spaces inside are wonderful, and they tried to do this wonderful thing, and to some extent did it in terms of the grass and plantings. But the buildings, just one after another with a rubber stamp. Yeah. Lewis Mumford called it the police state of architecture, and he was dead on right.
What bothers you about 1104 Park Avenue and 89th Street? Isn't it just like all those other Park Avenue buildings?
It's actually a little tiny building, three stories high. Many of those from the 1860s on Park Avenue, one of those little tiny buildings between the big ones. Very intact. Nothing bad had happened to it until an art collector made a roof addition. Now, you can make some nice roof additions, and she spent a lot of money on this, but the result was something that looked like a giant foot of granite pressed down this poor little building, innocent building, and I think she could have done something much, much better.
That has happened more than once in New York, where people have taken wonderful old buildings and then just put an addition on it that was totally out of scale or from such a different architectural style that even if it was good in itself, it looked really ugly.
Thomas Jefferson said, the hardest thing in the world is to design an addition to a building.
He was a pretty great architect, wasn't he?
He was. I wonder what additions he designed.
Or maybe he did amendments. My guest is Christopher Gray, who writes the Streetscapes column in the Sunday Real Estate section of the New York Times, and has given us some examples of the worst buildings in the city as far as he is concerned. In a moment, we will start speaking to some of the listeners who sent in really ugly buildings that Christopher thought were right on. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And let's go to our first winner, Douglas. Douglas, you're on the air.
Hello.
You, as a number of people, had a number of submissions, but the one I want to discuss most is the Marriott Marquis. So you and I agree. That is, I call it the Marriott Marquis de Sade.
Yes.
Why do you think it qualifies as an ugly building?
It's sort of a built diagram. It's like somebody just extruded the first thing that they sketched. But I think also it doesn't fit in New York City. It could be anywhere. In fact, one of the comments was that somebody couldn't even picture it. They couldn't picture where it was. And because when you walk by it, it's totally obscured by signage. But when you see it from the shot that I found, it looks like it could be in Houston, Atlanta, anywhere.
It's at 53rd and Broadway, and it's kind of faceted as it goes up. Is that right?
It steps back, and then it has this large round glass drum that seems to be giving birth to onto the Times Square.
Now, I hate to admit, but I would have hated that building even if it were beautiful, because it destroyed a great theater. The great theater was destroyed. The Belasco, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the Belasco? Anyway.
The Rivoli, perhaps? I haven't.
Well, the Rivoli was the movie theater, but I think there was a great legit theater on the side that was knocked down as well, and they put another theater in as a sop to all of us who complained. That is another problem, isn't it, that sometimes wonderful buildings are knocked down to put up not such wonderful buildings.
Yes, but, you know, I don't really feel it's fair to visit the sins of the fathers upon the sons. You can't criticize Madison Square Garden really for what it did to Penn Station. It's not its fault. You can criticize Madison Square Garden on plenty of other bases, but not that. I don't feel that's fair.
Because the destruction of Penn Station is a sin in itself.
Indeed.
And then one thing, Douglas, what is your web name on the Flickr page so that people can see your submission?
Meese was right.
Meese was right. How are you, Meese? Hello. We've had so many wonderful exchanges, and I love everything you posted, except that one, of course.
Thank you so much for submitting it, and congratulations for winning. I guess we could have done a Meese Kite web name. You know what Meeskite means? It means ugly in Yiddish.
Oh, yeah.
And Meese gives us... Well, but Meese was a great architect, although Prince Charles didn't exactly love a building he suggested for London. Do you think Prince Charles was just expressing that kind of prejudice that people have against anything that's new?
I'm sorry, Meese, excuse me.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think he was expressing a nostalgia for something that probably never really existed.
Yeah, well, but what do you think, Christopher?
I think Prince Charles has a pretty good handle on historic architecture. I think he has a pretty good handle on historic architecture and modern architecture. But you're right, it is a prejudice, and we do tend to penalize anything new.
We go next to Heather. Heather, hi.
Hello.
You posted the Franken House. Where is it exactly?
It is located at the intersection of Jewel and Norman in Greenpoint.
And is it a bad building or an ugly building?
I don't consider it a bad building, but it is certainly an ugly one.
For those of us who can't see it and are not looking at the Flickr page, by the way, what is your web name so people can check it out?
Okay, well, my Flickr page, or my Flickr name is Chica Poquita.
Chica
longhand for Chiquita.
Ah, okay. Chica Poquita.
P-O-Q-U-I-T-A.
Okay. And could you describe the building for us?
Sure. I mean, it's pretty easy to understand how this building came into being. You've got one building that was located facing Jewel Street. You have another one that was on the same corner that was facing Norman. And what the owner did, essentially, was graft the two of them together.
And? Cover them with this incredible
with
vinyl siding.
With large amounts of vinyl siding, which is actually a fascination of mine. And I actually document vinyl siding quite a bit on my blog, and that's actually the first time I came across this building. I featured it on my blog as a great moment in Greenpoint vinyl siding.
It indeed is a great moment. And I called Mrs. Russo, who has lived in that house since she was a child. They renovated that about 13 years ago. She was very amused that her building was being nominated for ugliest in New
York. Is she responsible for these
renovations? Well, she was the head of the family, yes, exactly. And although it was carried out by a friend of theirs, she said that people call it the Ponderosa. This siding, if you don't see it, is very, it's not the usual flat aluminum siding. It's modeled like big, heavy shakes, cedar shakes. And people call it, because it's so long and because it's sort of Western, even though it's white, they call it the Ponderosa, she says.
I actually think it looks sort of like the Monitor, which, given the location, is pretty relevant.
The Monitor of the Merrimack?
Yes.
Ah, with the monitor top.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Do you think this is something that might grow on you with time?
Actually, it already has. I mean, I Okay, yes, it is ugly, but it does have an element of humanity to it. And listening to what Christopher said, of course, about its creation makes total sense. The person who owned one of these houses clearly acquired the second one. Greenpoint is not a very wealthy neighborhood. It still isn't a very wealthy neighborhood.
And there's a lot of aluminum siding in Greenpoint.
Yes, I am actually in the process of determining the block with the most siding. And right now, Russell Street between Norman and Nassau is ahead. It's pretty amazing, actually. Out of 43 houses, 39 of them have siding. If you include asphalt, you're up to 42.
You are a boon supporter of the aluminum siding industry, and I assume you will be elected to the...
Well, I'll tell you what, it wasn't me. I'm not the one that supported aluminum siding. The fine people of Greenpoint did. I mean, I wish I was an heiress to the aluminum siding fortune in a big way. But to get back to my point, okay, there is a human side to this. Someone owned one house, he or she acquired the second one. Using the resources she had at hand, and I would imagine... the money she outlaid for this was very significant to her. I mean, to a developer, it would be nothing. But to her, it was. And yes, as Christopher indicated, she went to her friends. They put their heads together. And this is what they created. On the exterior, frankly, it's pretty ugly. But I would be willing to wager the interior is very nice. And I bet you it was the interior of the building that they were focusing their attention upon, mm-hmm. not the exterior.
Thank you so much, Heather.
No problem.
Thanks, Heather.
And by the way, you can see these buildings on our show page at WNYC.org. A little correction, the Marriott Marquis is at 46th and Broadway, and it replaced the Marusco Theater. Mm-hmm. I said Belasco. I knew it was some kind of Osco. Mm-hmm.
And the Helen Hayes.
We got actually 3,531 views on our show page. And I assume, as of yesterday, a lot of architects have been looking at it nervously to hope that not one of theirs.
We're not naming names.
Christopher Gray is with us. We will continue our conversation after this.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We're back with Christopher Gray, who writes the Streetscapes column for The New York Times each week in the Sunday real estate section. And he was enlisted to go over all the submissions from listeners of the ugliest buildings and the worst buildings of New York and then to suggest a few of his own. Were you surprised at the volume?
Not just the volume, but the astonishing variety of these buildings, especially in places I don't normally hang out in, like Greenpoint or Red Hook. There is such a range of architecture in the city, and even the siding we were talking about, it's such a variety of expression. It's absolutely fabulous. 40 years ago, you know what they would have been like, little brick boxes, nothing at all. And here we have an amazing array.
But are New Yorkers less... architecturally sophisticated than people in other cities? For example, Chicago really can be proud of much of its architecture. In New York, we took... You don't agree. Okay, well, we had the Ladies' Mile, and we had some gorgeous buildings there. And then in the 50s, people took all the decoration off of them and made them all look very generic. There is a Louis Sullivan building on Bleecker Street. Mm-hmm. People took all the decorations off of it. I mean, his buildings were famous for the great decorative detail on these modern buildings that he they kind of set a standard in the turn of the century. We seem to not really appreciate our treasures.
Well, that's a little harsh, I think. Each generation has its own architectural history that it wants to impose. For instance, the Lollipop Building on Columbus Circle, fascinating Huntington-Hartford Museum, but now it's being reskinned by the Museum of whatever, I'm not quite sure. I would say I was never a great fan of that building originally, but the new design, which is not built, not totally fair to, but the new design doesn't look promising, and most of the people on the website suggested that.
Edward Darrell Stone, who designed that, also took a very nice old brownstone on the east side and put a new facing on it and made it ugly. So
I love that. That's genius, and not to mention it's included in the historic district.
Dan, hi.
Hey.
What did you name as the ugliest building in New York?
I actually chose the Atlantic Center, which is kind of in the almost in the heart of Brooklyn.
Wait a minute. Is Brooklyn getting a bad rap here? You, Heather, and I think there's another building from Greenpoint that also is among the winners.
I think you guys are just choosing well. I don't know.
The Atlantic Center is now. I mentioned the building across the street from the Atlantic Center, the PC yeah. Richards. They're all of a piece, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing about the Atlantic Center, I think, is that it's quite large. It is in two sections, but it just feels so out of character with the neighborhood. You know, it's just. Really ugly, and I think the history of it was that it was always meant to be just temporary, and it feels like that still today, and I just wish that they would tear it down.
It's a nominally classical facade, red brick, sort of two stories, and it wraps around like a giant string of ribbon. Pretty unsuccessful, I would say. Might as well have been a Frank shopping center with P.C. Richards on it.
Oh, well, yeah. A lot of people in the neighborhood felt that it was an insult, that it was a creating a mall on the cheap because it was in the middle of Brooklyn. But what's going to happen with Atlantic Yards and which is the same developer, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really hard to say. I mean, I've seen the plans, and you know, it's going to be just enormous what goes in there. And I actually thought to put those plans in as the ugliest, but since it hasn't been built yet, I felt like I should give Frank Gehry and the other developers a fair shot.
Well, what do you think about that, Christopher?
You know, Leonard, I have my hands full looking backward. I do not have time to look forward.
But that area really has not been treated well. And I think it's partly because people don't really know what to think about neighborhoods that are in transition. That's all. So much of this architecture is connected to neighborhoods in transition, don't you think?
There is so much automobile traffic there that it creates a very unfriendly human environment, and I think that's a big problem.
Thank you so much, Dan. Marie, hi, you're on the air. Marie, you're in Greenpoint?
Hi. Yeah, my picture is in Greenpoint.
Uh-huh. A building on Leonard Street. Are you trying to get at me in some way?
No, I didn't even think of that. That's funny.
When did you first notice it?
I noticed it about a year ago, I think, when it had first been unveiled, essentially. I take walks in the neighborhood, and there it was, sort of screaming.
Straight out of Disneyland in Greenpoint.
Yeah. Well, it has a very sort of gingerbread house-like look to it, and it's sort of set back from the line of the streets on the building, on the street, and sort of stands out in that way.
Now, Christopher, Marie called it garrulous. Is that the word you would use, or just ridiculous?
I call it wonderful. This is the perfect correspondent for 2007 for the row houses, the Queen Anne row houses being built on the west side in the 1880s. If you don't see the webpage, it presents as four separate brownstones. There are four high stoops, which, of course, were discarded as completely useless in the 19th century. The facade materials are two colors, kind of cinnamon and tan of brick. And the brick, the darker brick, is executed in an astonishing variety. They spent a lot of money on this building. And that's really a modest thing of kind of checkerboard and intertwined Islamic motifs, Mesoamerican. There's some Tudor. It is really, really a neat. This is going to be a landmark in 100 years.
What do you think was their intention? Just to do an update on the row house?
Well, each house, although it presents as a row house, is a six family house. So here we are in modern times. But I called Abdul Muhammad, who is the architect listed at the Department of Buildings. I left a message. He hasn't called back. I am fascinated to know what was he thinking when he did that, because a lot of effort, a lot of money, and a lot of materials were expended in something that is bizarre.
Well, so do you have to look at it every day, Marie?
I don't look at it every day. I do walk past it often. There are actually quite a few others and sort of variations on it throughout the neighborhood that I'm assuming the same architect is building, that have the similar brick pattern, that have the very ornate fence work, that also have these kind of funny animal statues throughout.
Like cast stone lions at the top of the stoop?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I do think it is interesting, but it does have this very kind of ostentatiousness to it that is just very funny in Greenpoint, which as Heather, the previous caller, mentioned, is very much more known for its aluminum siding and kind of more.
Would you have liked it to have had aluminum siding instead of all this intricate brickwork?
No, I mean, I think it's fun. I think it is fun, but it does stand out.
Mm. Well, it is interesting that Greenpoint has two winners. Why do you think that is, Christopher?
There's a much greater variety of practice in Greenpoint. They're building in the private market. They're unhampered by people who, quote, know about architecture, as you would get in the Manhattan elite areas. And there's a much greater freedom. That's wonderful.
Thank you so much for calling us, Marie. Nicholas,
hello.
Hi. Tell us about your worst building.
It's an honor to be on the show. Well, I submitted four. I would say the worst building among the four I submitted is probably the Time Warner Center.
That's the one that Christopher picked. We're talking about the one that's on Columbus Circle?
Columbus Circle, yeah.
Now, it does have some great restaurants. Does that count for anything?
No. I mean, the Columbus...
And it has a jazz center? It's,
There's no doubt it's a great commercial center, but it's so out of scale with Columbus Circle. It's so completely out of scale and so dark I have an expression which I like to use, sociopathic architecture.
Do you think it's not an improvement in any way over the Colosseum, which used to be there,
well,
which many people hated?
It was an odd duck. It was about 9 stories tall, but it allowed light from the west to flood the circle. This thing blocks out all light from the west, and between the Time Warner Center and the Trump Tower, Columbus Circle is like you're in the bottom of a pit now. And it also trivializes completely Columbus and the idea of Columbus. And it robs him of his place of honor in the circle. And now the circle is about corporate logos and Donald Trump's ego, and not the discovery. But it's the blackness and featurelessness of it that I really don't like.
Do you agree, Christopher?
I see it as very fully featured, and I'm talking about the tower part as distinct from the shopping center base.
Mm-hmm.
I love the different fins and angles up there. I love to see it in different lights, and that from the back it looks totally different. You see it in different ways all the way around. I watched its construction ever since 2001. So you see, I think the tower is great. It's the base that looks like a train wreck of shopping centers.
Mm.
That's absolutely awful. Now, that's what I think trivializes Columbus.
Especially on the far south end of it, or the south east end of it, there's a strange glass complicated thing going on there, which has no purpose whatsoever, as far as I can tell. I've looked at it hundreds of times, and it just doesn't do anything for the circle. It doesn't aggrandize the circle or make it feel warm. I just feel like it's a big piece of black glass in my face, and I'd like it to have more of a reflection of the aesthetic of Central Park right across the street.
You know, all of these callers sound like they're architects. Nicholas, are you in the business?
I'm not an architect. I'm a pop songwriter.
That comes close. Thanks for calling us.
Thanks so much.
We go now to Sarah. Hi, Sarah. You chose a building that's called Blue Condo New York City. Where is it?
It is on Delancey Street near Norfolk.
Uh-huh.
And my boyfriend and I just were bemoaning this building. Before you had this contest, we were saying this is the worst building ever. It just sort of is symbolic of the destruction of the Lower East Side and just the destruction of all the character.
So when we asked for submissions, you knew right away which one you were going to send in.
Absolutely, yeah.
Have you seen this building?
I have seen it many times, and I'm afraid to say that I part company here, too.
You like it?
The blue building is so interesting and unique. It's a big glass tower, but it's kind of bent like it was run over by a truck, and then they stuck it back on end. And isn't it blue, isn't it, or with different shades?
It is blue, and it just sticks out like a big blue sore thumb in the middle of the Lower East Side.
Well, so did the San Remo stick out like a big thumb up on Upper Central Park West. But I recognize your point about the gentrification and displacement.
Yeah, it is. It's just like part of the Kmartization of the entire neighborhood, which is, I think it's really sad. You know, so many buildings and old stores with so much character in the architecture are disappearing now, and I think it's really sad.
But there were an awful lot of cold water flats on the Lower East Side as well. I remember looking for an apartment there once and being stunned by how run down some of those buildings were. So gentrification has its negative side, but it also has its positive side, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's like all the buildings that are going up in anything's place are just get uglier and uglier, and this one really took the cake.
Well, thank you so much. A lot of the a lot of the buildings that people have spoken to me about are just the new outsized buildings. There is the Richard Meyer on Grand Army Plaza. I've heard major debates on about the Frank Gehry building on the West Side Highway, which I find really attractive, actually, but many people don't. There are, on the other hand, almost everybody agrees that the telephone company buildings, except the one on Broadway downtown, are really ugly. There's the Verizon in Williamsburg. There is the one right behind us here alongside the Brooklyn Bridge that is really ugly as far as I'm concerned. Maybe they have to be because they have to be windowless. But are they just the easy, usual suspects?
Well, they don't have to be windowless because, of course, in the 20s, they put windows in all over. All the great art, many of the great Art Deco buildings, commercial buildings, are telecom buildings. It's funny, too, because windows are a great inconvenience for architects. They have to stick them in their what would otherwise be their wonderfully sculptural facade. And I would say that the telephone company has missed quite a few opportunities in making a really cool building because they were freed from windows, but that hasn't really happened, I'm afraid.
And why do you think that is? They just simply put up these generic buildings. Well, in one case you have the generic buildings, in the other case you have buildings that seem to be out of character because they're not like the other buildings in the neighborhood. The Richard Meyer, for example, just looks like a Richard Meyer building in the middle of a bunch of buildings on Eastern Parkway that look quite different. Should new buildings, what I'm trying to ask you, I guess, is if a neighborhood has some kind of a sense, the buildings all have some kind of connecting architectural concept, even if they don't look exactly alike, should a new one somehow try to fit into that or look totally different like a sore thumb?
I think I tend to go to the sore thumb side because the try to fit in, you generally get a kind of homogenized, processed cheese, landmarks-approved result, which is not very satisfactory. I like the designer to have a free rein.
Some listeners want to know your thoughts about the renovation of the Morgan Library, as long as we're talking about museums. Did you like it?
My sister works there. The architect had a very, very difficult task, uniting three separate buildings of totally different styles that had different little spaces between them. That was tough.
I mentioned earlier that many people think Chicago is a great architectural city, and you made a face. What bothers you about Chicago?
Oh, I didn't mean to make a face that it isn't a face, although they do have a chip on their shoulder in Chicago about architecture, don't they?
Well, they kind of started it in this country, didn't they?
I don't think so.
With Sullivan and Frank Lloyd Wright.
Many great architectural trends and architects started there, it's true. I was reacting to the idea. I think Chicagos are very sophisticated, much more than they think they are, about Chicago architecture. New Yorkers are very sophisticated about New York architecture without knowing it. Just walking around and living in the city, you see the building types and you see the typical things that get done, and that gives you a good base for understanding.
So should we be proud of New York as an architectural center?
Wow. One of those global questions. Yes, we definitely
should
be proud.
Well, we do have some pretty great buildings here.
We do have some great buildings. And people come here to see the buildings in a way I don't think any other city.
Well, one of the things that makes Chicago seem different is that the buildings are often discreet. So they're not bumped up against each other. But sometimes when you walk down Broadway, for example, and you see one wonderful building after the other, all next to each other, jammed up against each other, you don't really get a sense of what makes each one special in itself.
It is hard to pick them out. And often you see just the storefronts and you're not aware of what's above them.
Mm-hmm. But we are, one of the things that makes New York special is those storefronts, isn't it?
Well, some storefronts are more special than others.
What I mean is we definitely are a pedestrian city.
Yeah.
And was it William H. White who talked about why some streets work and why some don't?
Yeah.
And it really has a lot to do with storefronts.
Fascinating set of studies. And a walking city is so wonderful. I go down the same blocks for my whole life. I've lived here since 1959. My mother in the next room brought me here over my objections. Every time I go down a street, if I'm really looking, I see something different that I'd never noticed before, even something I've been walking down for 30 years.
Because it's always changing.
Well, not so much changing as there are different details that you're sensitive to at different times, and light can pick up something. I saw Cornerstone. I've been past the corner of 86th and Madison hundreds of times. Just the other day, the light was just right. I saw the engraving in a cornerstone on a building.
One listener nominates all the Trump buildings all throughout the city as a unit.
I think we penalize Donald Trump. I think you take the Trump logo off, and they're perfectly good. They're perfectly good. I kind of admire Donald Trump as a completely self-actualized person. Maybe a little too much id, but a completely created person.
Well, if you had a building, would you have your name, Christopher Gray, in letters that are 5 feet tall?
Ouch, ouch, ouch.
Christopher Gray writes the Streetscapes column for the New York Times each week in the Sunday real estate section, and he offered some of his nominations for the worst buildings in New York and then selected listener nominations. And we thank you so much for coming by and talking about them. And remember, you can see them all on our website at WNYC.org. Thanks again, Christopher.
Thank you. And I've got to go out and see PC Richards in Brooklyn.
On tomorrow's show, Ken Burns discusses his epic 7-part documentary, The War. Then Alec Weck on what she went through, fleeing war in Sudan, and the improbable path she took to become a supermodel. Plus, a look at alternatives to pesticides. And also, Joy Behar dishes and suggests what you can do when you're going through a rough patch. By the way, if you've missed something on the show or just want to hear something again, you can listen to archives of past programs on WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English and Blake Neeshick. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Rachel Krantz, Paula Crossfield, Barbara Kahn, Scott Goldberg, and contributing producer Virginia Doris. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.